My son called me. I was en route from New Orleans back home, and he said, "Mama, I'm going to need some help. I'm addicted to drugs and alcohol." He was married. He had a good job. I called Joe. Joe took him to his first meeting. So Joe will always play a very important part in my life, and I will always appreciate that. I'm going to take this off and put my glasses on. I came from I'm a native Houstonian, which is pretty rare in itself. I came from a loving but imperfect family. Thinking back on it now, after being in recovery, it was a wonderful family. But my mom had a drinking problem. She was an alcoholic. And I didn't know that as a kid. I didn't know what was wrong, but I knew something was a little bit off kilter. I'm 74 years old, and I've been coming to OA about 20 plus years. I don't give you an abstinent date. I can't play food math. I can't count calories or points or carbs or grams or fats. I just try to eat moderately and not in between meals. Some days are better than others, but one thing I've done right is I've kept coming back. So food was always an important and exhilarating part of my life, as was said in Bill's story concerning alcohol. Neither one of my parents were heavy, but they really enjoyed food. And I can remember my dad restricting his food during the day because he wanted to be, quote, good and hungry for dinner. And so as with most cultures, food was an important part of our day and our holiday. Now, keep in mind, my mom didn't work. It was a very traditional 1950s family. On TV, I see Leave It to Beaver, Father Knows Best, My Little Margie. We only had three channels. And I look at the family life, and it doesn't look like my family life. I mean, there's June in her pearls, and she's vacuuming and, you know, everything. The Beave always talks to his dad about his problems. And so as a kid, I internalized that, you know, like, my family is different. My family doesn't look like that. My family is flawed. So what started out as a small treat after school to comfort myself when my mom was drinking, I would ride my bike to what I think used to be called the U-Totem here in Houston, maybe the 7-Eleven, or, you know, they're on every corner. And I would get a canned drink or some kind of treat. And I realized, looking back, that was how I handled the confusion and chaos of having my mom not emotionally available on the days that she was drinking. As her disease progressed, so did mine. And she told us that she loved us and that she wanted, you know, to be there for us more than anything, but yet she wouldn't stop drinking. And as my disease progressed, I couldn't stop eating. So it was this little kind of sick dance we did. She was tall and thin, and I was not. As her disease progressed, she became more turned inward and stopped socializing a lot. My dad had a high position in a big company, and so he took people out to dinner. It got to where she didn't want to have dinner parties anymore or reciprocate. So all this is going on. I'm a little kid. I know something's not right, but I'm not sure what. What began as, like I said, as a little treat after school progressed into a full-fledged addiction. And I could not figure out how to handle it. My mom was not in recovery. I didn't know anything about OA. So I just kind of spiraled into some kind of downhill, you know, powerful progressive disease. I tried all the usual cures, the pills, the shots, the hypnotism, the acupuncture, the pay and weigh, the this, the that. And as we've heard in here before, I could get it off, but I couldn't keep it off ever. So at 5'3" and 275 pounds, I hit rock bottom. Food was my master. I opted to have an intestinal bypass operation. This was 45 years ago, before any of these current modern stomach surgeries. It was controversial. it was experimental. That's how desperate I was. I lost 125 pounds in a year. And everything just went straight through me. I won't give you the details, but it wasn't without its drawbacks. I do not condone nor condemn weight loss surgery. It's a tool. I thought it was the end of my eating problems. What could be better? I could eat whatever I wanted and not gain weight. So, I mean, to my little superficial demented mind, I thought, man, this is it. You know, I found the secret. Well, obviously, it didn't solve my eating problems. I was like the person it says in our OA 12 and 12. I had a great life. I just had a little problem with food. Well, turns out food was just a symptom of emotional and spiritual bankruptcy. But you couldn't have told me that then. I thought it was all about the food. So as you know, how this story goes, after a while, I started gaining the weight back. I'd never changed my eating habits. I never went to therapy. I didn't know about OA. And so here we go, back up the scale. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I can't do this again. And I began to realize by then I had two kids. I was as emotionally unavailable for those two boys as my mom had been when she was drinking. But I was eating. So I didn't swerve the car or have accidents. I didn't slur my words. I didn't stumble, but I was not available. And I'm sorry now when I think about that. But, you know, it was a coping mechanism. And it says in some of our literature that it might have saved our lives at the time. So that's just how I dealt with it. After 20 years of dieting and losing and gaining, I finally found OA. It was just like the OA 12 and 12 says. If I just could get to the right size, the right number on the scale, you know, I thought everything would be perfect. So I came to OA to lose weight, period. I wanted the smoothie recipe. I wanted the written diet. I wanted just tell me what to do. I didn't get it. I did not get it. That it wasn't about the food. I saw people who were happy. I saw people who were full of hope. I don't know what I was expecting, but I was shocked at my first meeting. There were over 100 people there, and everybody was laughing and you know, seemed very lighthearted. I mean, some people would share and tear up a little bit, but it was nothing like I thought it was going to be. And I was very much attracted to it. There were a lot of well-dressed memorial women, which if you're not from Houston, that's one of our more wealthy neighborhoods. And some of them were needle pointing and some of them were, you know, but everybody was listening and sharing and talking. And so I knew I was in the right place, but there was so much shame. I mean, I wasn't the drinker. What was I ashamed of? I was ashamed of my mother and the way we interacted once I got older. I feel sorry for my daddy. When I came home from college, I was like it says in some of the literature, I blew in like a tornado. They had this happy little home where daddy's in denial, mama's in her disease, little sister doesn't rock the boat like big sister. And so they were in this happy little la-la land. And then I come in from college and it's a shit show. So I feel bad about that. Obviously, my dad must have thought, oh, God, don't let her come home again. But, you know, I couldn't let it go. I had to fight back. It was awful. So my first sponsor brought me to OA. She had been in the program in Atlanta. And we began to attend the Saturday meeting where I met Joe. But I audited OA for a couple of years. I was there. But I tried to fix the program to manipulate. I tried to manipulate the program to fit my needs. And the way I wanted it to work, I really was not willing. Of course, I'd been to church my whole life. I'd prayed to God to help me lose weight, but I didn't want to stop eating. I wanted to be struck thin, you know, and that obviously didn't happen. So I stopped that. We started working the steps together and I was still overeating. I did my first fourth step on a weekend OA retreat. She told me, don't worry about doing it perfect. She shouldn't have worried about that. I'm not a perfectionist. Just do it. And so I did. And that night in our room, I asked her if we could turn off the lights and I could read it to her with a flashlight. And I cried through the whole thing, but somehow not being out in the light, somehow being in the dark, made it easier for me. And it was a very intimate setting, you know, two girls in a room on a retreat, twin beds, talking, laughing, giggling. And so that was my first fourth step. I began to recall and record all my past fears, resentments, and heartaches. I knew which ones were mine, and I knew the most glaring ones. And I was honest enough to do it to the best of my ability then. I've since done many more four steps, and most of it doesn't come back. But there's a few things that come up every single time. It was cathartic. It was mind-blowing, and I felt much better afterwards. I learned that if you open the door to God, He'll come. Or just a crack. And I guess that's what it means, is just do the next right thing. The more I turn to God, the more He turns to me. And the God I have in OA is not my Sunday God. And I'm still trying to reconcile that. I went to church this morning and I went to Sunday school. I'm Methodist. And then I had a quick lunch and I stayed for a memorial service. And I love church and my friends there. But that God did not do for me what my OA God has done. And I've tried real hard to reconcile those two. Joe, how am I doing on time?
You got as much time as you want.
Okay. My sponsor told me just to try to clean up the wreckage of my past, writing it down and talking to her. Becoming neutral with the past is one of the greatest gifts that OA has given me, because I now think back on all the fun we had, all the vacations, all the camps, all the good stuff. I've learned to put it in perspective. Yes, there was difficulties. There was chaos. There was confusion. There was disease. My mom was in and out of psychiatric hospitals because they didn't have the antidepressants back in the 50s. The antidepressants put you to bed, put you to sleep. So, you know, she just never could get well. So as I said, being neutral with the past. It says somewhere in our literature, or someone said it, and I wrote it down, that we didn't put our wounds there, but as adults, we're responsible for curing them. And that was huge for me. OA taught me it's never too late to have a happy childhood. That sounds so silly and so Pollyanna-ish, but it's not, because it's all, as you all know, the disease centers up here. And as I worked through things and got to know addiction and got to see my part, I learned to heal. And I have a poster from the 13th century Persian poet Rumi, and it says, a wound is somewhere that the light can enter. And I love that, because I can just picture, we all come with wounds one way or another, or we wouldn't be here. If we could do this on our own, we would have done it. And many people do. But we're here because we couldn't do it by ourselves. And I never got the emphasis of the fellowship right away. You know, I didn't quite get that. I mean, I thought that meant we all get together and talk on Saturday mornings, and sometimes we go to lunch and that's the fellowship. Because before the COVID shutdown, I only went to a meeting once a week. And so now with Zoom, I go almost every day. I love it. I look forward to it. This is where I get my emotional and spiritual food, if you will, medicine. I look forward to the meetings. I can't exactly say I was looking forward to this tonight because I was scared. I just wanted to listen. I mean, I just like to come and listen. And I've met all of y'all through this. I've seen you week after week for 2 years. I've heard you from different parts of the country. And so I'm feeling a lot better. Let's see. I put that honestly believe, and I now remember all the good things that happened at home instead of dwelling on the chaos, the confusion, and the hurt that my mom's drinking caused me. Compulsive eating is a disease of the attitude. Every day I choose to be happy. You know, Abe Lincoln said, people are just about as happy as they make up their minds to be. And again, that sounds so trite. So yeah, but if you only knew, but you know, it's true. In the morning when I read my readers, I call it my ritual, my coffee ritual. It just, you know, those are the thoughts and things that I think about all day. And if I miss it for some reason, if I have an early appointment, which I never do because I'm not an early riser, but I'm just, a few times I've had company or grandkids over and I didn't get that time to myself, and it makes a difference in my day. It really, really does. So the Fellowship of OA has offered me so much harmony and humanity. It's such a wonderful, wonderful fact that all of us have this disconnect or this disordered food. It's all common among us, whether it's too much or too little or not enough or getting rid of it or over-exercising or what. Like it says in the big book, we're like people on a ship, shipwrecked, and we just cling to each other. And I love that. I have a lot of friends, but they don't know me like y'all do. They just know me as being silly and liking to laugh a lot. And I mean, you know, I show my serious side, but not like when I'm with y'all. OA has taught me that life is like a boat and with two oars. And if you don't have the fellowship on one oar and the 12 steps, you will go around. If you only have one oar, you'll go in circles. Whereas if you have the two, you'll get to your destination. And I just love that. I guess it's because I'm visual. I've had many 4 steps, and I have been privileged to hear a number of 5 steps from sponsees through the years. There's always a very sacred thing that happens between a sponsor and a sponsee when you're listening to a 5th step. Persistence has been the key to my recovery. Sometimes I'm bored, sometimes I'm discouraged, and sometimes I feel defiant. I feel rebellious. I don't want to do that. Why do I have to do that again? I do that every day. I don't want to do that. But then I realize what it was like before. And I come to my senses because I don't ever, ever want to go back. The only way to get out of this disease is to work through the steps and keep on and on and on. With practice, abstinence has become cleaner and clearer, and so have the steps. I came to OA to lose weight, but this program has to be worked from the inside out. I hated that. I wanted it to work on the outside and then let me work on the inside. Let me get thin and beautiful at the perfect size, and then I promise I'll work on the inside. It doesn't work that way. I have to work it from the inside out. OA has long ago removed the shame and the unmanageability that I felt. The solution has been a new spirituality, which I found, never found at church. No offense to you churchgoers. It just was not the same. I have met God in OA and I've gotten to know him. But the best thing is I've gotten to know myself. That sounds so ridiculous. What do you mean gotten to know yourself? But I was so busy with everything. I'm a busy-lationist, not an isolationist. I like to go and do and run the streets and have fun. I used to call my sister. I have one younger sister. She passed away 4 years ago from breast cancer. After we retired from teaching, I used to call her and say, sister, what are we going to do today? And she'd say, sometimes, not often, she'd say, I'm just going to be today. I'm not going to do anything. Okay, talk to you later. I would call somebody else. I couldn't imagine such a thing. Just be. What do you mean just be? But you know what? Just being is a gift because I get to learn more about myself and I get to look inward instead of always outward. Let's see. I take good care of myself. I've learned that self-care is not selfish. And today I love myself. Because if I can't take care of myself, And if my abstinence doesn't come first, I know you've heard this, you know what I'm going to say. I can't take care of anybody else. And that is really, really true. I always, before OA, I associated food with comfort, ease, relaxation. You know, like people, like it says in a big book, people drink because of that, the way it makes them feel. And that's the way food used to be. And abstinence to me used to mean deprivation, diet, do without, you know, white knuckle, go to the bathroom and call somebody. And now it's changed over 20 years, really. And now I see abstinence as a great gift. It makes me happy. It makes me love myself and it makes me feel good about myself. I think something's interesting that maybe y'all don't know about in the book titled Overeaters Anonymous. We used to call it the chocolate book. I think now it's maroon, but it says in there that Dr. Theodore Isaac Rubin, who also was a fat person, he says that he believes that repressed anger plays a powerful role in addiction. He feels that eating binges are often displaced temper tantrums or rage reactions. He believes this, the roots of addiction can be often found in the earliest times of our lives due to complicated family relations. Isn't that interesting? I definitely think that's what drove me to the food, complicated family relations. And as a little kid, you don't know what to do. You don't know how to sit down and have a family discussion. You don't know how to problem solve or critically think. You just reach for something that makes you feel better. It could be drugs, alcohol, sex. We didn't have drugs back when I was growing up. I didn't even see a drug until I got to college. Let's see. For many years, food took away my fears and resentments. It was my best friend, and then it became my worst enemy. Remember that you have to do, first thing you have to do is be willing to believe and to act as if. Pocket your pride and do your fourth step. Disclose every twisted character and dark secret of your past. And that's where turning off the light and saying it in the dark with a flashlight came in. The opposite of addiction is connection. And that's what I feel when I come to these meetings. I feel a connection with everybody in the room, not only obviously this meeting, but my local meetings. I've learned about humility, which is not thinking less of myself, but thinking of myself less. Because it was always about me, 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 me. What do they think about me? How do I look? How do they think I look? How do I think they look? Who cares how you look? I found out people aren't really listening to me. I mean, they're so busy about worrying about themselves that, you know, they don't pay that much attention to a lot of the things we worry about. I also learned that being humble means recognizing that we're not here on earth to see how important we can be, but rather to see how much difference we can make in the lives of others. And that does go right along with my church teachings and my Savior's commandment to love thy neighbor as thyself. It's like the 12 steps or chapters in the book of life. And you've got to, you know, I try to stay in 10, 11, and 12 now that I've been here so long. Newcomers come to these meetings to learn about the program. Old timers come to these meetings to carry the message. And it's very, very important. Every time you come to a meeting, you are doing service and you are helping someone who's not quite as far down the road as you are. OA is time consuming and it is sometimes inconvenient. If you have sponsees, it's not always convenient to talk, to put aside the time, to share. But OA will save your life. So it's well worth it. I'm going to close now with a quote also from the chocolate book. Are you seeing a theme here? Titled Overeaters Anonymous. It says, if you remove your body from the truth, then when you're ready, the truth is nowhere to be found. But if you continue to bring your body to the truth, then when you're ready, the truth is there and it's waiting for you. And that truth, our promise of recovery, is in every OA meeting when we join hands, pray together, and joyously and lovingly encourage one another to keep coming back. Thanks, everybody. I'm happy to see you and happy to be here.
Thank you. It was wonderful. Okay, do we have any questions for Bronwyn? Raise your hand and then we'll unmute you. Okay, I didn't have a second speaker tonight and I told Bronwyn I'd only, okay, yeah. Chelsea, if you have a question, go ahead.
Hi, everyone. Hi, Bronwyn, Chelsea, compulsive overeater and restrictor. Thank you for that wonderful share. It was amazing. I love your wisdom and I love the Christmas little headwear. My question was just that book that you quoted about, sorry, I had to write a note because it was good. This is what I wrote. This is sort of what I took away. Binges, bit about binges equal rage, temper tantrums due to, I think it was something along the lines, disconnected family relationships. What book was that or person who quoted that?
I'm looking for it right now.
The book was the original Overeaters Anonymous book.
Oh, it's, the brown it's one. Now,
the brown one. It's out of print now.
And, Kelsey, this is it. I thought, Joe, that they redid it on it with a maroon. It looks like this, but I'm sure you can find it on Amazon online. And it's in the foreword where the doctor, who's a psychiatrist, is real interested in the food addiction because he has it. He suffers from the same problems. And so I just thought that was interesting when he said, you know, it's unresolved rage or frustration often brought on from the earliest times in our lives due to complicated family relations. And that's what I had. I had complicated family. We still do. Okay. So Chelsea, does that help?
That's wonderful. I can relate to that statement. Yeah, excellent.
Another, me too. I thought very that was helpful. Really,
there's another quote. There's another quote from that book what I like, which says, "Thin will not make you well, but well will make you thin." And I think that's something I held on to for a long time. Theresia.
You're muted.
Sorry. If you could go, I loved your share. If you could go back over that quote about if you remove your body from the truth and
Also in this book. Let's see. If you remove your body from the truth, then when you're ready, the truth is nowhere to be found. But if you continue to bring your body to the truth, when you're ready, the truth is waiting for you. And that truth is the promise of recovery in every meeting when we join hands, pray, and say, keep coming back. That what I feel is that, you know, they told me a long time ago, if you're in the rooms, it can happen. If you leave or go out, as they say, it's impossible. So just keep coming back over and over and over and keep doing the same things. You know, I repeat the same things day after day, the things that help me. It says in one of our readings, our daily readers, that what is it? Repetition is the only something that nature can sustain. And that means doing the same thing and, you know, doing something different if you need a different result. If something's working for you, then keep on doing it. Repetition and routine. That's been very important in my recovery. Routine. Doing the same thing. Somebody on one of these, this meeting one night said, I eat like a zoo animal. I eat the same thing within reason, morning, noon, and night. Not literally the same thing, but same things for breakfast that work. Same things for lunch that work. Same things for dinner that work. And I think there's a lot of wisdom in that. Melissa?
Thank you.
Hi, thank you so much, Bronwyn. My question is, I'm Melissa, compulsive overeater, and so happy I heard you tonight. So I grew up in a wonderful Episcopal church, and I'm having a hard time too, because I felt so good about my church, but I feel like this is a different, has to be a different higher power. How did you join the two, or how did you handle that?
I'm still working on it. Like, you know, as I shared with you, and I'm just telling you this because it's, I love my church. I love the people. We had a wonderful Christmas party Friday night. But that God is like a Sunday God. And he's also, right. You know, that religious part, the Bible and all, it's almost like a history book. I don't really understand it. And I don't believe the whole thing. I mean, if you've ever read Revelations, I don't want to get too biblical, but I mean, stuff went on that could never have gone on. So, you know, I think that's to be taken as a grain of salt. I'm not a literalist. I think the Bible's a guide. I don't believe that every single thing in there happened, but I believe that the God, my OA God, is there all day, every day for me. And that's just.
Still love your Sunday God too, though. You love your Sunday God.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. And they don't have to mesh. You know, I'd like for them to. I'd like to wrap it all up neat in a little package and just have one God. And I mean, that sounds so blasphemous, but I don't mean it like that. It's the same God. I just use them in a different way.
Okay. Thank you so much, Bronwyn.
Sure.
Janice, you have to unmute. You unmuted for a minute and then was muted again.
Hi, my name is Janice, compulsive overeater. Thank you so much for that share, girl. It was so wonderful. I love your lipstick and your fingernail polish. I want to know what color that is. Also, I want to say that the book she was talking about, it's also in the first, second, and third edition. And the third edition, we call the Bassiquid book. That's what is in that book also. And I think that other thing you're talking about is, they called it Roseanne's Prayer, but now we call it OA's Promise.
Right.
Yeah. So that's documented also.
Good to see. Right. Janice, on the book cover of this now, it's like two woven pieces of
fabric.
Yeah, there it is.
Yeah,
there it is. Marlene has it, so it's not out of print. That's it. Chelsea, are you here? Yeah.
You know, I love there's an explanation in the front of on the cover. It's because it was a quote from Roseanne that said, "By now, OA had completely woven itself into the fabric of my life." And that's how that started coming about. It's a quote at the front of the book. Thank you for letting me share that, Joe.
You're welcome, Janice, as always. Love you.
Love you.
Okay, anyone else? Go ahead, Hannah.
I just want to thank you very much, Bronwyn. I mean, I've seen you all this time. I've never heard you. And I loved it when you said the brown chocolate book. I mean, I bought the book when it first came out, the one with the hardcover, but I never heard that. I think that's wonderful because that was my favorite food. I never knew anything else was edible. So it was wonderful that you quoted it. And because nowadays I can't read any of that. I have the one Marlene showed because I have it on my iPad and I can read it. I can make everything big, but I keep all the old books just, you know, for memory's sake. And it's wonderful. And all the things that Roseanne did and wrote, and I'm very grateful, and I'm grateful that I'm here and that we have such a wonderful meeting. And like you, and when we had face-to-face meetings, sometimes I had to drive for 50 minutes to get to a meeting, so I got to two meetings a week. And now, you know, you can go to as many meetings as you like. I mean, there's something to Zoom. I love it and hate it. It's like technology, but I'm grateful that I can go to meetings whenever I feel I need one. So thank you again. See you next week.
Thank you, Hannah. Okay. I didn't schedule a second speaker for a reason. We have a holiday coming up this next week, the 4th of July or something. I'm not sure which holiday. And holidays are always difficult.
It's my birthday, Joe. That's okay, what we're
thank
talking
you. About. Thank you. It's so what I would like to do is, you know, my first holiday sober and abstinent was Thanksgiving. And I had to keep in touch with the people. I went home to my parents, which was always difficult, and I had to keep in touch. And I had to say the Serenity Prayer probably about 50 times an hour. So what I would like to do is open it up to some people for just a couple of minutes. If you can talk about how to make it, and this is for the newcomers and some of us old timers, how can you make it through the holidays without overeating? So who would like to start? Don't be bashful. I'll call on people. How about, okay, Marlene.
Hi, I'm Marlene. I'm a compulsive overeater and a sugar addict. How's everybody doing tonight? And I know that a lot of you are my friends and you might have heard me like say some of this stuff before, but Joe brought in somebody maybe last year who did a step workshop and he changed my life. And there's actually someone here from that step workshop, a couple of people. And it was so important to like do the steps with him. And one of the things that he told us that we had to do was we had to pray in the morning. We had to, say a morning prayer. We had to say the Serenity Prayer. We had to like read the For Today book. We had to read the Voices of Recovery book. We had to write down our action plan. We had to write down our food plan. I mean, we had to work. And if you could think about it, like, you know, when people talk about Thanksgiving, sometimes they just say, oh, my God, there's so much food. I don't know what to. You know what? Why don't you just think about Thanksgiving like it's Thursday? And yeah, Christmas is really like wonderful and there's lots of presents, but there doesn't have to be a lot of food. The place that I'm really a little nervous about is my birthday. And so that's like comes between Christmas and New Year's. But I'll get through that too. I've gotten through it for 72 years and I'll get through it this year as well. So just remember that you have like all of these people here. Take everyone's phone numbers who you like. Take people's phone numbers that you have already and give people a call. Write them a text. You can do this. It's not a big deal. It's just another day.
Thank you, Marlene. Lee?
Hi, I'm Lee, compulsive overeater. I think one thing that I have really been focusing on for Christmas holiday season is getting together with people that mean something in my life. And I think I did that last Sunday with an OA friend I've known for years and years that lives in a different state. We met halfway. I got together with a longtime friend who's not doing health-wise too well this past week. She brought me to my first OA meeting, and I'm planning to get together with another longtime friend. I haven't seen him for a couple of years now this week. So the more that I have these people in my life, I feel happier. I feel fulfilled. I feel like I'm really understanding the true meaning of the Christmas season to me. You know, it's not about getting presents. It's about letting people that you love, that mean something to you, spend time with them. Let them know how much they do mean to you. And the other thing, Christmas Eve, I'm going to my Saturday morning meeting, Christmas Day. I'm assuming there's a meeting this time next week. I will be here. It is a special day for me. It's not just another day, but it's not about the food. You know, my daughter and I are planning a very, very simple meal. It's going to be the two of us. Our real celebration will be 3 days after Christmas when my grandson comes home from the Navy. He'll be with us for 10 days. That's the real second celebration. So I wish everyone who's celebrating Hanukkah or Christmas just, you know, a wonderful time and, you know, enjoy the spirit of the time and the people in it. Thank you.
Thank you, Lee. Mark?
I thought you were going to go over me, but look like you still is my friend. Hi, friend. my name Mark. I'm a compulsive overeater and a bulimic. And glad to be here another day that your life on my terms. All right, I'm going to make it easy for y'all. Write down my telephone number and call me. And that's how you say Ashley. That call me up on the phone. Ask John. Me and John have wonderful relationship on the phone. And we have good times on the phone, doing recovery on the phone. But if you don't want to do it on the phone, do the other thing what I do. Go to a hospital or treatment center and see how a patient is doing. And me and a group of friends going to be doing that for Christmas and New Year's. I love it. That what kept me abstinent for many years, you know, and you know how many years I got in here, and I'm still here from doing that, just that, and I love it, and I love y'all. Have a blessed, and not day no more, and night now. Have a blessed night. Bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you, Mark. Teresia?
Hey, again, I'm Teresia, still recovering compulsive overeater. One of the things that works for me is lately I've been doing a lot of going, traveling on the road and seeing people in San Antonio. So what I do is I pack a cooler with my vegetables because it's harder for me to find vegetables when I'm out running around. So if I have those, I feel secure, and sometimes even my fruit. That way I know I've got those. I feel comfortable about, because meat you can get anywhere, in my opinion. And I'm leaning more towards the vegan side anyway, but a lot of times I'll keep them cool with those plastic water bottles. I'll just keep filling those up instead of buying those freezer packs, because I end up leaving those freezer packs at everybody's home. So the water bottles really help. Thank you all. I love this meeting and everything it said.
Thank you, Teresia. Nancy.
My name is Nancy, and I am a compulsive overeater in Los Angeles, and this will be, God willing, my 47th holiday season in Overeaters Anonymous abstaining, and it's been a lot of change, and I want to say there is no one set person in Overeaters Anonymous. We're all a bit different, you know, and people that came in here 300 pounds being beaten by men, you know, out of their mind, we needed a lot of rules around us. And I was taught, if I was going to go anywhere, to bring my own car. I was taught to bring a member of program with me if I was going to go to family. But my first 3-4 years, I was told to stay safe. And safe for me was not really with people who would question me, because I had 33 years at that point of being crazy and reacting to everything anybody in my family ever said. And I did not have enough time in my belt of abstaining to not react. And so it was a lot more besides just being able to put the right food in my mouth. It was that my behavior wouldn't go nuts. And it's not that meal, because sometimes you can get through a holiday and you seem fine. It's 2 weeks later that you can start putting things in your mouth. So I was taught very much to be of service, and we went caroling. And I want to remind you to go to OALAIG.org, the LA Intergroup New 12 Stepper. There will be a meeting with three speakers in the morning and sharing. There's going to be a couple of marathons going on all day Christmas, one in Florida. There's OA has, and also don't forget about Alcoholics Anonymous. As long as we behave, we are welcome there. And they have so many marathons, and they're strong and they're tough, and they talk recovery and they talk program. But remember, when in doubt, leave it out. And I am so about bringing my own food. I am so about checking out where I'm going and what they're having. And remember, you can call somebody in OA and ask for permission not to go. You know, and I think that, you know, we were taught to always share with the newcomers. And when you're new, it's a whole different story than when you've got 5 years or 10 years or 20 or 40 years, you know. In the beginning, my advice was always given to stay safe and to stay humble. And to remember, and for me, it has to be just another day when I talk to God and I write maybe a double gratitude list, but always being of service. I would call 10 people that day to ask them how they're doing and what I can do for them. So thank you so much. And there's so many things we can do.
Thank you. Victoria?
Victoria, compulsive overeater. Bronwyn, amazing share. Love you. I mean, you're fabulous. What I heard you say, Joe, about your first abstinent holiday season, I think I heard you to recollect what happened. And I recollect, I'm 20 months of abstinence. So this is my second abstinent holiday season. And last year for Thanksgiving, I went up to my son's for Thanksgiving and he had his in-laws who we hadn't met. So there was 9 of us total, including me, and everyone was coupled up. There was food nonstop and drinking nonstop. And I felt like a ninth wheel. I felt so isolated and not a part of. I mean, I couldn't believe how triggered I was being there. And it's out of town, so I'm not home. I'm not in my area. And I immediately that night hopped on a meeting. There was an OA meeting. And what's different this year is, and I acknowledged how hard it was for me being there. First of all, I gave myself the ouch. I didn't eat. I had clean, beautiful food. So this year it's round 2. So now I'm going Christmas, the usual suspects, all 9 of us, except for there's a new grandbaby. So there's 10 of us this year, which is such joy. But this year I'm going to take care of myself differently in that I'm on a GroupMe app of people in OA. So everyone's available for outreach, 10 steps, and to be connected, because we're so lucky here. We speak on such deep levels, much like what Bronwyn was sharing, like she's fun with her friends, but here we go deep. And so I don't expect that from my family and the new in-laws, but I do represent recovery when I'm there, whether it's quietly, secretly. I used to say I might be the only copy of the big book they ever read. And so because of that, I'm not making a big deal out of it. I gratefully have food neutrality. I have total alcohol neutrality, and I'm trying to have cigar neutrality, but I'm not there yet. Anyway, so I want to wish everyone a happy, abstinent, grateful holiday season. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, Victoria. And Heba.
Thank you, Joe. Sorry, I couldn't find the microphone. I am starting to get a Heba compulsive overeater, sugar addict, emotional eater. I'm starting to get invited to some, it's not mostly my family where I feel that my absence can be sabotaged because I don't live around my family, but you know, around the holidays, we get invited a lot here and there. So I have 3 things that I'm doing that are really really serving me. One of them is reminding myself that I am there to connect with people and try to get as much as I can into beautiful conversations, and also talking to God and asking him, what am I doing there? What light can I bring, or what light can I get from other people, just to shift my focus from, you know, the buffet. The second one is committing in writing to my sponsor that I am not going to break my abstinence today. I am not going to sabotage it. I am not going to attempt to take myself even too close to the food and I'm staying away even visually from whatever might sabotage my abstinence. And so far, so good. I've been into 4 events so far at my school. Every time they want to reward me, they get me dessert. I got a lot of boxes of the first item on my abstinence list, and I always gift it back before getting into my car because I love to eat in my car. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you. Lynn, I'm sorry we're out of time. I will just close with this. The second Thanksgiving or third Thanksgiving I had at my house because my parents said we're not having it. And someone made a sugar-free pumpkin pie. And I asked my mother, I told my mother, and she said, well, if you'll get me the recipe, I'll make you 2 or 3 of them. And that's the way my family ate food. And so, you know, the main thing is just remember what I have to remember is abstinence is the most important thing in my life without exception. Now, since we close this meeting with a reading from the big book, and since Bronwyn talked, I have asked Marlene to read. And Marlene, if you would, we will close with this, and then we'll close with Roseanne's promise to us all. Marlene?
Okay, I'm ready.
Go.
God willing, we members of AA may never have to deal with drinking, but we have to deal with sobriety every day. How do we do it? By learning, through practicing the 12 steps and through sharing at meetings, how to cope with the problems that we look to booze to solve back in our drinking days. For example, we are told that in AA, that we cannot afford resentments and self-pity. So we learn to avoid these festering mental attitudes. Excuse me. Similarly, we rid ourselves of guilt and remorse as we clean out the garbage from our minds through the fourth and fifth steps of our recovery program. We learn how to level out the emotional swings that got us into trouble, both when we were up and when we were down. We are taught to differentiate between our wants, which are never satisfied, and our needs, which are always provided for. We cast off the burdens of the past and the anxieties of the future as we begin to live in the present, one day at a time. We are granted the serenity to accept the things we cannot change and thus lose our quickness to anger and our sensitivity to criticism. Above all, we reject fantasizing and accept reality. The more I drank, the more I fantasized everything. I imagined getting even for hurts and rejections. In my mind's eye, I played and replayed scenes in which I was plucked magically from the bar, where I stood nursing a drink and was instantly exalted to some position of power and prestige. I lived in a dream world. AA led me gently from this fantasizing to embrace reality with open arms. And I found it beautiful. For at last I was at peace with myself and with others and with God. Thank you.
Thank you, Marlene. We do give out one chip at this meeting. It is a desire chip. It's this little silver disc that is a symbol of your desire to do something about your eating or your eating behaviors. And it's a virtual chip right now. Is there anyone who would like a desire chip the week before the big holiday to do their abstinence? If you would just unmute and give me your name, I'll pass you a desire chip.
Hi, my name is Angela. I would like to have that chip.
I'm handing it to you right now. There you are.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I'm Anna Sheree Rose, recovering anorexic, and I'd like to have that chip.
Okay, there you are. I passed it to you. Okay, anyone else? Okay, great. We will close then with the serenity prayer, I put my hand in yours. So a few moments of silence. I put my hand in yours, and together we can do what we could never do alone. No longer is there a sense of hopelessness. No longer must we each depend upon our own unsteady willpower. We're all together now, reaching out our hands for power and strength greater than ours. And as we join hands, we find love and understanding beyond our wildest dreams. Keep coming back. It works if you work it in. You're worth it. Thank you again.